Clean, safe, local. Your home for business is the Village of Bedford Park. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Nothing is off limits as host Sophia Franklin dishes on her personal life, like toxic relationships, dating and hookups, and dealing with insecurities. All with humor and real talk. Find Sophia with an F on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Thursday afternoon, December 19th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. 31 degrees right now in Chicago under cloudy skies, going up to 36 today. We will see some snow late tonight into tomorrow, up to 3 inches of accumulation possible. The details and the complete forecast from AccuWeather coming up in just a couple of minutes. Markets are higher today. Let's get the latest now on trading from Bloomberg and Scott Car.
Well, Rob, Wall Street is shrugging off yesterday's sharp losses. Tech stocks again driving stocks higher. The Dow is higher by 91 points. That's 0.2. The S&P 500 higher by 8 points. And the NASDAQ is higher by 24 points, Rob.
Thank you very much. We'll check in with Scott at 12:23. An experience-based entertainment company coming to North Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago. We'll learn more in our next segment. But right now, we're learning that jobless claims ticked lower last week, home sales surged last month, and the economy was even stronger than it appeared last quarter. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Bob Bruska, Chief Economist, Fact and Opinion Economics in New York. Bob, thank you for joining us today, and you're the expert, and I'm not. I'm here to ask you questions, Bob, but home sales being higher than expected, the economy in the third quarter growing faster than anticipated, and jobless claims ticking down, that all seems like it's very good news.
Well, the news is really kind of mixed. You know, we did have this report from the Philadelphia Fed today, that's a manufacturing report, that slipped to a minus 16.4 reading from minus 5.5 in November. And this is as weak a reading as we have seen in this in many months, you know, going back to April of 2023. So, you know, the manufacturing sector continues to be really weak. The job market we see bounced back after having a really strong sell-off, last month, or a big increase in claims in the holiday shortened week, as we bounced back from that. So the job market is really, I don't think the story is that claims fell sharply. The story is that the sharp rise from a week before wasn't authentic. So there's no news there, really. And, the housing market data have been toing and froing, and, you might see a better number here and there, but housing is still under a lot of pressure. And with what's going on with after the Fed meeting yesterday, they did cut rates. They reduced their guidance. It looks like we're going to be looking at higher rather than lower rates ahead. I'm just a little bit wary about making assessments of how the economy is doing. I think it's going to get a little bit firmer. I think that Donald Trump is coming in. He's going to try to provide some stimulus. I think the risk is whether he can do that without creating inflation or not. And the Fed is already admitting that it may have overstepped what he should have been doing in terms of cutting rates, given what inflation is up to. So I think we're in a very transitional period, a very difficult period. And I think it's a really good time to really be humble about what you think you know about the economy.
I was going to say, especially when it comes to the third quarter GDP being revised upward, in terms of cutting interest rates in an economy where it continues to just chug along, what does that do for inflationary pressure moving forward? Because these are a very different set of economic circumstances, especially if you're the federal government and you're setting economic policy, a very different set of economic circumstances now compared to the beginning of the first Trump administration in January of 2017.
Yeah, well, they are. They're different, and they're in some ways the same, too. I mean, if you look at the GDP revision, first of all, about half of that revision came because of trade, came because of revision in exports and a small revision in imports. But if you compare back to 8 years ago when Trump came into office, what's the same is that here's Trump. He's an outsider, less of an outsider now. He was coming in. He had stimulus plans. The Fed thought the economy was at full employment. The Fed was making plans to raise rates, and they did that throughout his term. But we never had inflation, but they raised rates. And so now here we have Trump again, and he's coming into office. He's got plans for more stimulus, renewed the tax cuts, maybe put tariffs in place, you know, kick migrants out. And the Fed is wary because it's, you know, it thinks the economy is at full employment already. And actually now the unemployment rate is already creeping up and the inflation rate has crept up as well. So Trump finds a much less hospitable economy for the things he wants to do.
And that will be the story of 2025. Bob Bruska, Chief Economist, Fact and Opinion Economics in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, more changes coming to Chicago's Magnificent Mile.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Japanese clothing retailer Uniqlo returns to Chicago's Mag Mile, joining a new interactive museum in filling the space being vacated by Under Armour. Let's get an update from Rachel Herzog, reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Rachel, thank you for joining us today. And like suburban shopping malls, the Magnificent Mile wasn't going to be at this low point forever. Someone was going to figure out what to do with all of that retail space, and it seems like that evolution is taking place.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So the Magnificent Mile has definitely struggled with vacancy over the past couple of years, but like you said, they're definitely making incremental gains toward decreasing that storefront vacancy, just with a few new deals this year.
And then, it's not back to the way things were in the 90s when you would go, even if you were a tourist or even if you just lived in the city or the metropolitan area, you'd go downtown, you'd go to North Michigan Avenue, you'd go to Nike Town, you'd go to the Disney store, you'd go to the Sony store. Those days are gone. It seems to be, and this is very similar to what's happening in some of the suburban shopping centers, it's not just shopping anymore. It's all about experiences. And how is that experiential sector coming to North Michigan Avenue?
Yeah, so that experiential entertainment-based retail trend has definitely been a big thing in the past few years. We've seen this wave of, you know, things like the Museum of Ice Cream, the interactive Harry Potter experience that was at Water Tower Place that are filling these big retail spaces, albeit sometimes for a short term, but, you know, it really is, you know, attracting the customers that might not come to the Mag Mile to shop, that might be turning to e-commerce, and then kind of just demonstrating kind of the hybrid nature now. Maybe people will, go shopping for clothes while they're downtown doing something experiential.
Now, what's interesting here is that a lot of these large spaces, they used to house one particular store. When you have new entities coming in, they're kind of splitting it up. So it used to be Eddie Bauer on North Michigan Avenue, then it became Under Armour, and now Uniqlo is coming in. It's a Japanese clothing chain. And then you have this Paradox Museum, which is sharing the space or leasing another floor in that particular building. And is that the future model going forward, that maybe the retailers will come back, but it's a smaller footprint compared to their predecessors, and then you have an experience filling it out?
Yeah, so Uniqlo is actually finalizing a deal to most likely take the entirety of Under Armour space. That's a two-level, approximately 29,000 square foot space. And it is about half the size of the store that Uniqlo used to have at 830 North Michigan. And so the planned interactive museum is actually elsewhere in the building on the third floor, but it definitely does kind of demonstrate the hybrid nature of, you know, the way that landlords are kind of filling these spaces with multiple purposes that's, been successful instead of just having a single type of retailer fill the entire building.
What's interesting, and I was there when it opened, I covered the opening of the giant Starbucks that used to be in the Crate and Barrel space on North Michigan Avenue 5 years ago. And I think a lot of cynics said that who would go to a really big Starbucks? And the answer is a lot of people. And it turns out that maybe that was a glimpse of the future of North Michigan Avenue, and we just didn't know it at the time.
Yeah. I mean, I think you get traffic from tourists who are maybe willing to splurge on, you know, a unique experience, a $9 cup of coffee from the world's largest Starbucks, and just kind of have that special occasion.
And then lastly, there's still big challenges on North Michigan Avenue. I mean, we're looking at a retail vacancy of 34.1%, and all of these stores that were once landmarks, places to go, places to be, places to meet people, are empty, and they're still trying to figure out the future. So this may be one path forward, but it's still a long path to walk.
Definitely. I think 2025 will be a big test of whether they'll be able to make a dent in that vacancy rate, which has hovered at, you know, more than 30% over the past 2 years, and whether foot traffic will come back to the way it was, or whether the avenue will look different.
Rachel Herzog, reporter, Crane Chicago Business, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, identifying an object that's very hot this holiday gift-giving season.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday. Drones dominate Christmas wish lists this year as demand surges, sales soar, and inventory sell out thanks to recent headlines. We welcome in Carl Prouty, the technologist, Apt Electronics in Glenview. Carl, thank you for joining us today. And this whole hullabaloo about drones possibly sighted over East Coast cities and East Coast states like New Jersey may lead some people to think, a drone may be a great Christmas gift. And you sell them, Carl, at Apt Electronics. And what are some rules of thumb to follow if you want to become a drone owner in the new year?
Well, I think a lot of it just comes down to responsibility, and that's like all the way across the board. So purchasing one, there are some rules that go along with it. If it's over 250 grams or a little over half a pound, you have to make sure you register it with the FAA. And it's cheap. It's $5 per drone, and that lasts you 3 years. So that's something to consider. You have to be 13 years or older to be able to register it, which parents can do that as well. So that's not quite as big of an issue. But then you have to be responsible with the drone itself. They're not cheap. So you don't want to fly it into a tree, into the side of your house. It's one of those things that there is a learning curve. You have to learn how to do it properly, and your footage will come out really great if you do that.
Now, that's something that I did a couple of years ago. I found a cheap drone on Amazon, knowing that if the $20 drone, I fly it up on the roof and it stays there, I'm not going to feel bad.
Right.
When it eventually like falls down in the thunderstorm, I'm not going to feel bad. But if it was a $500 drone, you know, then I'd have a great deal of drone guilt, I suppose. So if should you do that? Should you get like the cheap drone first and kind of test your pilot skills before you take the plunge and like get the really sweet drone that could take the HD 4K video of your backyard or wherever you want to fly it?
That's not a bad idea, but the nice part about buying a nicer drone, something in that $500 to $1,000 area really, is they have a lot of fail safes built into them. So a lot of them have ways to detect if you're going to hit something, and it will automatically stop that from happening. If you're flying amongst trees, it'll detect if you're getting too close, or if you're flying too close to a building, it'll stop you from running into it. So there are, on those nicer drones, ways to prevent that stuff from happening. But it's never a bad idea to start off on something that's a little bit cheaper, that just in case an accident happens, you're not out of pocket, you know, $500,000.
And then lastly, what are some of the rules regarding, you know, with the FAA, but also just respecting everybody else? Because I have seen some really cool drone video on YouTube of someone flying their drone through a freight train, going through the empty boxcars, buzzing the engineer and the locomotive. And it's really amazing video. But I'm guessing that doesn't pass the smell test with a number of jurisdictions.
Yeah, there's definitely steps to take if you're going to be doing stuff like that. There are classes you can take to become a certified drone pilot, which in a lot of cases, if you're going to be flying them commercially, like if you're flying them over people in an enclosed environment, things like that, you do have to have a license to be able to do that. Now, not everyone goes that route, but that is something to keep in mind if you are kind of looking to get the most out of what your drone's capable of.
Carl Prouty, the technologist, Apt Electronics in Glenview. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Technology Thursday, tracking some of the biggest tech failures of the year.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Allo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Amazon delivery workers in suburban Chicago walking picket lines today. A ruling has been handed down in the Georgia election interference case against President-elect Trump. In Technology Thursday, there are plenty of success stories in tech this past year, but there are also some notable failures. Market observers are debating the merits of the so-called Santa Claus rally. WBBM Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 243 points, NASDAQ up 92, and the S&P 500 up 28. We have 31 degrees right now in Chicago under cloudy skies, going up to 36. Snow tonight into tomorrow morning, up to 3 inches of accumulation. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. A strike is underway by drivers at the Amazon Distribution Center in North Suburban Skokie. Luke Sanciato is among the workers who walked off the job.
We have drivers driving trucks that, you know, are inoperable or not in proper condition in order to be driven well. We have people out here with, clothes and gear that's not suited for the weather and the elements.
The action is in conjunction with walkouts by members of the Teamsters Union at Amazon facilities across the country. With the Georgia Court of Appeals has removed the Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis from the election interference case against President-elect Trump and others, the ruling means it'll be up to the Prosecuting Attorney's Council of Georgia to find another prosecutor to take over and decide whether to continue to pursue it. The decision leaves the future of the case uncertain. It's already been largely stalled for months while the court considered the pretrial appeal. It's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues. Stocks are trading higher today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home. Welcome in Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager, MacroTides.com in San Diego. Jim, thank you for joining us today. We had a massive sell-off yesterday afternoon after Fed Chair Jerome Powell threw cold water on the idea of many interest rate cuts next year, two on the schedule now, and the markets did sell, but they're bouncing back a little bit today. But does this recalibrate investors' expectations going into next year?
Well, it does, Rob, and I want to wish you and all listeners a Merry Christmas and potentially a happy and healthy new year in 2025. Yeah, people were counting on 4 rate cuts. The Fed indicated 2. The main thing that the Fed members pointed to, Rob, was the uptick in inflation, and they're going to need to see inflation improve by coming down more. That relief, I think, is coming in the first 4 months of next year. If you remember, the first 4 months of this year, there was a big uptick in inflation. It totaled about 140 basis points. In other words, 1.4% on the CPI. That's what's going to get taken away in the first 4 months of 2025. If the monthly number for the CPI goes up 0.25, that means 1% for those 4 months. It would mean that the annual CPI would drop by 0.4%. But it's going to take time for that, obviously, to unfold because the April data won't even be reported until mid-May. So I think there's some relief coming. But in the near term, the focus is the Fed isn't going to be cutting nearly as much, and a lot of stocks are priced on interest rates And more importantly, we've seen Treasury yields tick up quite a bit since the Fed cut rates in mid-September. And I think that's where the real focus should be, is watch Treasury yields.
And then also, it seems like the Fed has changed everyone's expectations regarding inflation, and that the last couple of months, it seemed like the fight against inflation was largely over. That 2% target was in sight, and now it sounds like the Fed's saying, "Wait a minute, maybe we're not there just yet."
Well, yes, but again, it all comes back to takeaway values, Rob, and the takeaway values from October, November, and December of 2023 were really, really low. So what that meant is when you added 0.2 to 0.3 to the monthly numbers in these 3 months, the annual CPI was going to tick up. So I think, again, the Fed is being forced to drive the car looking through the rearview mirror, and they want to maintain inflation expectations to be restrained, and they have to kind of talk tough. The one thing I would say, and I've written about this extensively, I think the Fed should stop forward guidance. First of all, they're only right about one-third of the time in terms of what they think is going to happen. And the goal is to depress volatility, and we saw how well that went yesterday. But, you know, that Fed is obviously going to continue with forward guidance, but I just think I don't think it does the market participants any good.
And then lastly, from a consumer point of view, how are we closing out the year? I mean, we do have some numbers on housing, stronger than expected, but you're starting from a very low base, just given how frozen the housing market was. And then also, you see some people, when it comes to retail sales, they are buying ahead, perhaps, on big-ticket items, but other categories are muted. So how are we winding up the year as far as consumers are concerned?
Great question, Rob. I think there's big bifurcation. The bottom 50% of wage earners are really under the gun because the cost of living has gone up so much and has exceeded their income. That's why a lot of voters who traditionally voted Democratic went for Trump, in the hopes that he will be able to bring inflation down. The other half, we saw 3 million people go through the TSA checkpoints over Thanksgiving, and they're benefiting from the big increase in housing prices, asset prices across the board. So this bifurcation, I think, is going to continue as we go into next year, which means if we ever see a sizable correction in the stock market, that will have economic implications as well. And again, I think the 10-year Treasury yield is going to be key in terms of how much weakness we see. So that's, I think, the key going into early next year.
Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager, MacroTides.com in San Diego. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, noting some of the big flops in the tech space this year.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday, and today we're looking at some of the biggest tech failures of 2024. Welcome in Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show. Based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, thank you for joining us today. Let's talk about some of the notable tech misfires this year, starting with a company that is based in Chicago, will not be based in Chicago before too long, and that is Boeing, which has had the year from heck, and that was starting in January when we're just a couple of days into the new year, and when that plug door blew out on that Alaska Airlines flight, and the hits just came on coming for Boeing in 2024.
Yeah, it's as they say here, I'm actually in Park City, Utah right now, as they say out here, oh my heck. and that's the shield people from what they're really thinking. And the fact is, I mean, it's easy. Let's put it this way. Let me start with this. Technology is miraculous in many levels, right? We're all getting used to sort of astounding things happening with AI, astounding things happening with mobility. I work on creating video content about replacement hips, knees, and shoulders that are liberating people from their pain. I mean, it's just amazing. But it's also, I'm really glad you're pointing out the problems, because that's it's part of the success. And Boeing is probably the poster child for this. In addition to obviously the near tragedy of that door blowing off that Alaska Airlines flight, we have an ongoing problem. Houston or Chicago or wherever they go, we have a problem, and that is that a couple of astronauts are sitting up in the International Space Station that went up in June. It sort of reminds me of, you know, Gilligan's Island, a 3-hour tour, right? They're going to be up there for a few days. They're still there. They will be there for a few more months because Boeing's Starliner can't get up there without fear of failure. And obviously they don't want to harm anybody. So at any rate, there's some astronauts stuck in space because Boeing cannot get it right in this particular case.
Yeah, and the saga of the Starliner, funny, you mentioned Gilligan's Island. I was thinking of the movie Marooned with Gene Hackman and Richard Crenna, where they were they had to send another Apollo capsule up to get them and bring them back to Earth. But in this case, the competition is riding to the rescue. A tried and true SpaceX capsule is going to bring Butch and Sunny, the two astronauts, back from the International Space Station, but that will happen sometime in the spring. And then other tech misfires this year, we have the CrowdStrike outage. That was all sorts of fun for people who are trying to fly in mid to late July.
That's exactly right. CrowdStrike, you know, their motto is we stop breaches. Well, what they did was they stopped travel for a little while. they had a single line of code. And again, this happens all the time. With major tech companies, and they fixed the problem. In this case, however, the problem caused a global shutdown with Delta, 7,000 flights. Delta is suing CrowdStrike for $500 million, basically saying that it was a global catastrophe, and I'm quoting that. And there were some shortcuts that were taken. Delta claims that CrowdStrike took some shortcuts. And frankly, the incredibly broadly used, broadly installed software, CrowdStrike software, failed one line of code, and down goes the network, and down goes everything else. So that was a huge problem, and obviously an incredibly costly one.
And then we spent a lot of year talking about the promise of AI, but the other side of that coin is AI slop. These hideous images that make their way to social media, and because they look good to you, you have no problem passing them along, even though they have nonsensical hashtags attached to them, like Beautiful Cabin Crew and Scarlett Johansson. But I think this leads to a larger issue, and that is AI presented us with our first test about what's real, and I feel like a lot of people failed that test this year because they passed things along just because it looked good, even though the principals involved may have had three legs or 10 or 24 fingers.
Exactly right. And I think, you know, we've descended in a very complicated, highly technical way from spam to slop. And what I mean by that is that this is ubiquitous, truly everywhere you look. Now, everything goes in sort of fits and starts in technology. There's huge successes. Everybody's sure they're going to be driving flying cars. And then all of a sudden that's not going to happen. And all of a sudden it is again. And in the case of AI, what's happening is huge advances in processing, in technology, and certainly in software that guides image development is happening. So you can look at some stuff, and to your point, it very likely you will not be able to tell that something is real. You have to use a discerning eye, but it's pretty quickly that discerning eye just won't be enough. The result is, like you said, AI slop, a huge wave of junk. Now, will it be filtered out by, you know, social media platforms and so forth who are determined to make sure that they don't lose their audience? Maybe, maybe not, but it's everywhere. And yeah, you know, buyer beware, viewer beware.
Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show in Cambridge, Massachusetts, talking about the misfires in tech in 2024. It's 12:45. We'll talk about the Santa Claus rally next.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The so-called Santa Claus rally is a market phenomenon where stocks see a short-term positive effect around Christmas. Let's discuss the phenomenon with Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And do you believe in a Santa Claus rally?
Well, there's only one period of time where the statisticians would actually agree that there is a Santa Claus rally, which is important to point out because everyone starting along about Halloween declares every rally in the market to be a Santa Claus rally, and there's no statistical rigor to it. But the one period of time where there is an above average chance of a rally is the 7 business sessions that begin after Christmas and go to the second business day of January. And that does have a statistically significant increase in probability. that the market will rise. And I want to mention that it is a probability and there are no guarantees here. So one shouldn't actually bet a huge amount of money one way or the other. But if one were wanting to be a betting man with your betting woman with your investments, a trade that goes in maybe on Christmas Eve and goes to the second business day of January has an above average chance of making you some money.
We're talking about the period December 24th through Friday, January 3rd of 2025. Now, there was some discussion a couple of months ago or a couple of weeks ago, actually, that maybe we wouldn't see a Santa Claus rally this year or it would be muted because the markets took off like a rocket after Election Day. But given yesterday's sell-off, does that make a Santa Claus rally coming December 24th and running through January 3rd, does that make it more likely?
It doesn't make it more or less likely. I've gone back and looked at all of the years, actually back to when the Dow Jones Industrial Average was created in 1896, and I've looked at years which have had big downdrafts like we saw yesterday or big rallies in November and December up until Christmas Day, and to see if there's any correlation between those moves and whether the Santa Claus rally exists or not. And there was no correlation that is worth writing home about. So I wouldn't say that there's above or below average chance of the rally occurring this year just because of what we've seen either yesterday or in the last couple of weeks.
And then lastly, just what is it about that final week that makes a Santa Claus rally statistically likely? Are there any factors that kind of play into the Santa Claus rally actually happening?
Well, yeah, there are a number of theories. The one that I think makes the most theoretical sense is that there's a lot of tax loss selling up until Christmas, and that's, of course, a phenomenon where you try to realize a loss in order to offset some of the gains on which you would otherwise have to pay tax. And people tend to get that tax loss selling done before Christmas, and stocks have been artificially depressed because of that selling, and then they can rebound after people go on vacation and don't continue that activity.
Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. Thank you for joining us.